The weather slowed the railroad down and even stopped it for some time. The Indians threatened to put it out of existence. What the construction crews had, the Indians wanted. Livestock, rifles, ammunition, hats, jackets, food in cans. Much of it could be easily captured by a raiding party. Then there were scalps. Most of all, there was the land, which the Indians regarded as theirs. One quick dash on the casement's working gangs, one pile of rails or ties set over a completed track, would bring riches such as never before known on the Great Plains. There for the taking. The soldiers seldom, if ever, could detect, prevent, or defeat an Indian raiding party. Dodge wrote to Sherman pleading for more protection. The Sioux had cleaned out two of our subcontractors of everything they had and scared the workmen out of their boots, so they abandoned the work, and we cannot get them back. The Sioux had also raided men cutting trees for ties in the Black Hills, killing several, and hit a survey team, killing a soldier and a surveyor. After other complaints, Dodge told Sherman, "I have smothered all the recent attacks and kept them out of the press." But Dodge was not so successful as he wished in keeping the Indian raids out of the newspapers. It became a major story, played up in all the papers, especially the New York, Chicago, and other big city dailies. The scalps taken, the wounds inflicted, the savages' practice of firing arrows into dead bodies or mutilating them in other ways, and many more atrocities were widely reported, with full details, some of them made up by the reporters. As the weather improved, the raids increased. On June 2, Ferguson recorded, "This morning, shortly after sunrise, the camp was aroused by the cry of, 'Here they come, boys.' He and his tent mates grabbed their rifles and rushed out. And there we saw the Indians charging down upon us from the northern bluffs. The white men fired, and the Indians pulled back, then retreated. One of the engineers captured from the Indians a white woman's scalp, which was quite green, having been killed but a few days." A few days later, Sherman was in Nebraska examining the line and pondering the Indian raids. He wrote to Grant. "The Indian country was large," he said, "as large as the whole settled United States. It posed enormous problems. But the railroad, when completed, would settle many of them. Supplies could then be hauled west in sufficient quantity to mount a real offensive action against the Indians. Military posts would be unnecessary because the train could move the troops around." The Indian guerrilla war continued. Two of Dodge's surveyors, L.L. Hills in the mountains and Percy Brown west of the Rockies, were killed. They had been caught unaware. They should have been looking out for themselves, but there was something in the nature of these surveyors that made them careless of danger. Both men and their parties were entranced by the country around them. In June, it was in full bloom. Thick grass flowed in the wind, delicate white lilies sprouted through the grass. Even the cacti were covered with red and golden blossoms. On June 18, Hills wandered away from his party and was caught by a band of Arapaho. He was riddled with arrows. A month after Hills' death, Brown was looking for the Continental Divide west of Nebraska, but he found that he was in a great basin, 500 feet lower than the surrounding country. He and his party set off across it in search of water flowing west. The Sioux caught them. A long skirmish followed. Brown was hit by a ball in the abdomen. He staggered a few hundred feet before falling. He begged his assistant to shoot me first before riding off, but his men would not abandon him. They let the horses go, hoping the Sioux would follow. They did, and Brown's men improvised a litter by lashing their carbines together. They trudged down a ridge. Brown never groaned or complained. A half hour after reaching a stage station, he died. Dodge could not afford to lose his best surveyors.